Rowley is responsible for the operation and maintenance of the Mildura Weir and Lock 11, one of several key regulators of the Murray-Darling River system.
That's when they were building it. That's the concrete and the weir, but there's no trestles there yet. And that's when the excavation of the lock channel. They built the lock in there.
The office here contains a number of archives which hark back to the period when the lock was being built.
Oh, they're all mixed up, but this is part of the old headworks. There's the old crane they used to lift up stuff.
So most of it would have been just manual labour.
Yeah, manual labour.
Brute force.
Yep, and with horses and steam dredges. You can see the old horses. This is a resume from the chief engineer.
The CV?
He was applying for another job in 1938.
Although these archives are fairly accessible to anyone who's looking for them, not a lot has been done on the history of this time.
There isn't a great deal on record about this period. When I was doing my research, of course, you have to do a literature review, and there's precious little out there to review.
Helen Stagg recently completed a Master's in Oral History, which looked into the period that these locks and weirs were constructed along the Murray.
My mother actually grew up at the lock construction sites. Her father was a steam engine driver at the lock sites, starting work at Lock 1 and moving his young family, onto the site at Lock 5. Between 1922 and 1927, and from there on to the site of Lock 7 construction up until about 1934 when Lock 7 was finished, and then they moved on to Mildura, which is where I was born.
Part of Helen Stagg's work has involved interviewing surviving members of these communities.
I interviewed Max Pearson, who's from Wakery. His father was a foreman at the lock construction sites, and Max has very strong memories of the lock work times.
I was born during the construction of lock number one at the Blanchdown. That was the first lock to be built. And it took 4 years approximately to build a weir and a lock. And when that 4 years was up, all the houses were pulled down and carted to the riverbank, put on the barges, and the paddle steamers then were towed to where the next lock was to be built, and all those building equipment was put on the bank there, and we had to get it up to where we were going to build our house and for the next 4 years, and we went on living. I was 16 then, so I had my first 16 years of life was spent on the banks of the River Murray.
Also interviewed was Marge Francis, who lives in Mildura and was born on Lock 9 in 1924, when her father worked as a static engine driver.
This engineer said to Dad, he said, "You've got a static engine driver's licence, haven't you?" And Dad said, "Yes." He said, "How would you like a job at the lock?" And that took Mum and Dad and my grandparents to Lock 9, where I was born. 7 years later, my brother was born at Lock 7. Wherever the men went, they had to build their own homes, because only the bosses had homes supplied for them. We more or less carried our homes with them. We were lucky, I suppose. My father had a 1924 Chev. So, of course, everything was, the house was on top of the car as we moved.
So what was life like in these communities?
All the education we had was primary school. The government of the day had a school built. It was just a wooden iron place with a long gable roof on it. And there were over 100 children used to go to those schools. The one at Lock 7, about 118, I think, at one stage, and we had one teacher.
The social life at the locks was very rich, and they had at least a weekly dance. You know, the children were the sort of the linchpin, I guess. And if there's a school concert, everyone would come out and watch, and there would be entertainment with music. One of my interviewees told me he learnt, I think it was the banjo at one of the locks. So music was there, as was films. Films were a big part of their social life, and films would come in on the mail truck, and one of the local men would you know, put on the film. He had the skills to run the projector. The school would double as the dance hall or the picture theatre, and also as a Sunday school.
We played cricket, we played football, and the girls played basketball, rounders, used to play a lot of marbles. And generally we would do what children in other areas would be doing. And my father was a very, very good gardener. And that was one of the first things he would do when we got to a new site, as well as building additional rooms, was to get his garden going. We had goats, cows, and kangaroos rather, and emus, and fish. We used to have to go out after school hours, bring the goats in and the cows in for people that had them. And in the morning, we would have to go and check the traps before we went to school. We used to refer ourselves as a little village town to care and to share for other people. That was the only way that we were able to keep our existence going. I smile now when I think back on those days. I used to work for a fortnight for $2.75, working on the Goolwa Barrage. In those days, that was £2.76 I would get for a fortnight's work. I used to think I was the king. I had so much money. I used to feel then that what we were doing was worthwhile.
All these things that I can remember, the curlews, hearing the curlews calling, the birds, the swish of the water, more or less putting you off to sleep. You got used to it. Like everything else, you go where the work is. When you look back on it, it was an experience of its own.
We have made it a part of our lives to go back to these areas and try to relive the type of towns that they were and the type of families and the names of most of the families that lived in the areas. And you can still go to some of those locks, not all of them, but you can still go to some of those locks and know exactly where the little towns all over the villages were built. And there's still reminders there of some of the litter that was left behind, as posts and railings, bits of galvanised iron, some of the roofing. All those little odds and ends are still around to indicate that in that area at that time was over 100 families had built their homes and lived in that area.